anybody who excels in his field is because you love what you do. So if you love that particular area of expertise, you love hospitality, follow the heart. That would be my principal advice. And the rest, the skills, the knowledge, the planning of the career, what to do and how to do it will follow. The choice you make for yourself, be very, very passionately clear about it and committed to it.
Welcome to the Hospitality Mentor Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Turk. Join me as we dive into the personal stories of some of the world's best hospitality professionals. We follow the journey of their ups, downs, and wild turns to find out what it truly takes to make it in the amazing world of hospitality. This episode is brought to you by our podcast partners at Real-Time Reservation. Their inventory management system is best in class for hotels and resorts to manage their non-room inventory. The web-based application allows for creative upselling of overnight and daytime visitors with add-ons and pre-planned packages. Hotel guests and non-guests can reserve cabanas, pool chairs, activities, amenities, excursions, events, day passes, and much more. The real-time reservation platform offers a fully integrated pre-arrival portal where guests are verified through the property management system. Guests can prepay for cabanas and activities through credit card integrations, which are then processed through point of sale. All of our listeners that might be interested in using real-time reservation are welcome to explore the demo at realtimereservation.com. Once again, that's realtimereservation.com. Welcome to another episode of the Hospitality Mentor Podcast. Today, I am very excited to have Ashish Verma, the Senior Vice President of Luxury Division for the Unbound Collection at Hyatt Hotels. Ashish, welcome to the show.
Gratitude. My pleasure and a delight to be with you, Steve.
Well, you have a tremendous story and a journey, and we want to get to some of that, but we always start with what was your very first job in hospitality?
I was fortunate to have been selected as a management trainee for Oberoi Hotels in India. It was a very tough selection process. I was really pleased to join and amongst the best colleagues to start my career with a great company, very established in luxury hospitality in India with Oberoi Hotels.
And so what made you want to do that? Was it something that you saw? I was like, wow, that's the place I want to work. Was someone from your family doing it? What was it about working for Oberoi that got you there?
I was very fond of tennis, a typical teenager, if you will, long hair, bandana. Bjorn Borg was my idol. And my dream was to win Wimbledon like most tennis kids and tennis players. Mm-hmm. I had a little bit of a back injury, so I couldn't pursue tennis beyond my university. I did win my university championship. Beyond that, career-wise, my father retired as a military general from the Indian Army, so that was very natural for me. I thought I would join the Indian Army. At some point, a distant cousin actually suggested that I should consider hospitality because he knows that I love travel, I love culture, languages. And when he mentioned, I was not sure that was something serious, but he did mention two hotel companies in India, Oberoi Hotels and Taj Hotels. And when I researched a little bit and I went to one of the Oberoi hotels in Old Delhi to research this opportunity as a management trainee. And the moment I stepped in, something felt really different and special, the culture of Oberoi hotels. And once I applied and I went into the selection process, the competitive part of me said I really want to get selected to be part of Oberoi hotels. And I never looked back. And I'm so fortunate looking back now that I made that decision, even though encouraged, sort of introduced by my distant cousin, but it's a blessing.
I love it. And you're actually the second person that started in that role that we've had on the podcast. We have another gentleman named Mohan Koka, who's down here in Miami at the Surf Comer Hotel, who did the same exact thing. So it's amazing to see that it is a great place to start. And so for you, were you someone who traveled as a child going around different places, or was this like your first exposure to luxury hotels when you started working here?
I did travel more as a military brat. With my father being deployed and posted around, I did travel a lot with them. And then fortunately, there were a lot of opportunities for us to enjoy leisure time up in the Himalayas and the coastline and some remote parts in the deserts, etc. So I was always fond of traveling. I was curious, but no, I was not exposed to luxury hotels. As a military brat, We travel a lot, but it was more like adventure travel, but definitely not luxury.
And was it something that stuck with you right away? You're like, wow, this really is a different world than all the standards you have to learn and all these things, or did it come to you easy? You have a great smile, so I'm assuming that that's just born into you.
The fact that I was born in India, perhaps because we are very committed to hospitality as a culture. In our tradition, you know, guests is like God. And when I did step into Oberoi's, it did feel very special. The granite floors, the team, you know, so well-dressed and polite and courteous. And I happened to be a neat freak and very organized. And I felt this environment was, at a superficial level, something I'd enjoy working in. And once I started training, I thought it was more and more a fit for me.
So you're doing a great job there. And then you make a change to a hotel we're going to talk about later on as well here, to Hyatt. And so how does that start coming about? You do your management training, Hyatt comes calling, you go looking for something. How does that start?
It was actually personal. I had gotten married and Oberoi was transferring me to another city. My wife had moved from Denmark. We got married and we lived in India. And when they were transferring me, my wife's work was in Delhi. So I couldn't leave to go to this transfer Oberoi was asking me to take on. So I had to switch. But what happened sort of, and I say had to, it was for the better. When I moved to Hyatt International, I started working in New Delhi to stay in New Delhi. Not only was a great hotel company I was stepping into, but also I got right away an opportunity to work in rooms division. So moving from food and beverage to Oberoi's to rooms division in Hyatt. And it was one of the best things which happened in my career because Hyatt really groomed me to develop my career. And I worked with them from New Delhi in Paris and then eventually in New York.
Yeah, you do that for 11 years. You're with them. That's a long run for anybody in a certain hotel. And you move to different cities. And like you mentioned, there's something, you know, not many people go from rooms to food and beverage, right? It's usually like these tracks that you kind of stay on. But there's some people that are great leaders that do both. Was that something that you really pushed for once you were in rooms to get over back to food and beverage? Or was it something like, how did that happen? Because a lot of people are in those positions now. What would you tell them?
Mentorship. My GM at the Hyatt Regency in New Delhi, Mr. David Wills, when I interviewed with him, he said, I have an opportunity in rooms division. And are you flexible to move? I said, absolutely, Mr. Wilson, because one day I want to grow my career to be a general manager. And it's good for a general manager to have broader knowledge. And at that time, it used to be the classic two streams, if you will, rooms division and food and beverage. Later on, we've gotten avenues, obviously, from marketing and finance, even outside the industry. However, those were classic paths. So I knew that I'd enjoy this exposure. And what was amazing is that how he groomed and guided me with the Hyatt mentorship and Hyatt track program. And eventually, when I did go to Paris and I worked there with Michel Josselin, who was the director general, the GM, area director for Hyatt's in Paris. He guided me further. And eventually on that track with Hyatt International, he introduced me to Mr. Rakesh Sarna, my general manager at the UN Plaza Park Hyatt in New York. Wow. And he said, I have an opportunity in food and beverage. And he worked in food and beverage. I said, absolutely, Mr. Sarna. So basically, I was flexible, Steve, because I knew, I trusted I was in good hands. And fortunately, my mentor with Hyatt International was so genuinely caring. They vested in me. Obviously, they saw this young guy is keen. He wants to develop. And I was flexible. I was hungry to learn. And that fortunately has paid off.
Yeah, I love hearing that. And you mentioned too, like you must have had, you were married. And so those are some big changes to make to go from where you're living in India to Paris. Was that the first time you had lived outside of the country?
I traveled to Denmark, my in-laws, and for Christmas, etc., and we'd vacation a bit overseas. But yes, to actually live overseas. And Paris worked out very well because now my ex-wife is in fashion industry. And that move to Paris suited us because one, obviously for my studies, and two, in fashion, Paris was a good place for her to continue to work. And then subsequently to New York was a combination too, because, you know, she'd moved from Denmark for us to get married and live in India. Both of us moved to Paris. And then when I was getting opportunities with Hyatt to move, they'd offered me either to go to Spain at that time, to do a property in Madrid when I was graduating from my MBA program, Cornelistic in Paris, or go to Guatemala or to Guam. And I said, Guam is quite remote. Guatemala, I don't speak Spanish. And my wife, I don't think, would be very happy, though Madrid is decent. And she and I spoke and said, if I may ask, were a little bit more cosmopolitan city, and New York came up. And fortunately, this opportunity was available at the UN Plaza Park Hyatt. So we moved to New York, which is great for both.
That's amazing. So in that story, you could have just said, all right, I'm going to stay here in Paris, but you asked and said, hey, I really want something like this. And a lot of companies may not say, well, it's this or take it or leave it. I'm surprised that they found you this place in New York. Were you nervous asking for that, or would you recommend people to always chase what they're looking for?
I was never nervous asking for it because there was certain confidence I had with the way I'd been groomed by Mr. Wilson, Mr. Chosselin. And I remember the senior HR VP, I think he was senior VP, Alain Schroeder. I remember engaging with him. He was based in Switzerland for the region for Hyatt International. Were very supportive. They understood my personal, they understood the personal equation. So they were aware that my, you know, wife being in fashion, and I was very inspired the way I was managed. And I think that's been a natural part of me, always caring for the team I oversee, since I was cared for. And it so happens even our culture at Hyatt is to care for people to be their best. So it's a very natural fit for me, the way I was cared for. They were always very flexible and accommodating.
I love it. And so you're here in the United States, you're in New York, but then you make a change. And this is sometimes can be scary when you're with a company for very long and you end up in New Orleans. How does that happen when you get to the Windsor Court Hotel?
It was actually a visa situation. I wouldn't have left Hyatt. I was an H-1B visa because when Hyatt International transferred me, they're a management company. My visa was actually sponsored by the ownership, which was the UNDC, the UN Plaza. So it was employer specific. And those years, this is mid-90s when the visa was sponsored, they were not transferable easily. So my immigration attorney said you could jeopardize down the line your labor certification of permanent residence. So when my conversations were Hyatt, where they were willing to transfer me as they were leaving the management contract for UN Plaza Park Hyatt to transfer me to the Park Hyatt Stanhope Park Hyatt, which they were acquiring on the Upper East Side. But I had to stay back for my visa. And as it happens, I got the opportunity to join Orient Express. That was a big change, no doubt, from New York to New Orleans. But I had been there for a vacation with my wife, and we loved New Orleans from a small little, you know, quick trip, long weekend. And I lived in Paris. It's very Francophone. Obviously, it is not just Francophone. It is Territoire Français. It has a French legacy. It was a French colony. The charm, the food, maybe to my Indian palate, the spicy Cajun flavors, the people, the passion, and I love history. And it's so central to our history, the Louisiana Purchase, the Battle of New Orleans. And it so happened that I arrived a few months before Hurricane Katrina. So I really love New Orleans. It's a very, very deep part of me, Steve.
Oh, it's a special city. What is it about that city that makes it so special? Because I've been there. I visited. My brother lived there for a while when he went to law school. I mean, we're sidetracking here. But what about that city do you enjoy the most? Because it really does have something as you walk the streets.
I think there's something very thick in its air with history. It's just, you could cut it with a knife. It's very nostalgic. The gas lanterns and the French Quarter, the streetcar uptown, the Antebellum, architecture, history, food, music, the people. I think it's really the people. They're so proud to our history as Americans. New Orleans is very central. Louisiana, just we basically formed a nation from New Orleans in many ways with the Louisiana Purchase, the Battle of New Orleans, etc. So they're proud Americans, and they're very proud New Orleans in their traditions and their customs. Is so sophisticated and polished and proud. So I think it's a whole package, ultimately. They gave us the original art form of the United States, the jazz.
Jazz, that's right.
So passionate about their football team, Saints. So I think it's a great city, and no wonder you love it too, Steve.
And so as you're there, this is something I always love finding on the journey. You become the general manager of the hotel, or you start. Do you start as a general manager there, or do you become the general manager?
I moved there as an assistant general manager in May of 2005, and the hurricane happened in August.
Yeah, right when you got there.
Yes, so I was promoted the week of the hurricane on Friday. The hurricane hit on August 29th on Monday at 9 a.m. landfall, and on Friday, I was promoted by our VP, Mr. Dean Andrews, as the general manager to start working right away.
Oh,
on repairing the hotel and bringing the hotel back.
So what is that like for you? So you're promoted during one of the worst catastrophes in the history of the country. You're in charge of this iconic hotel. It's the first time being a general manager. Did it hit you as you're sitting in that seat? Like, wow, like I am in charge here. Or was it been prepared for this by my mentors? What was that like?
I never had time to think too much about it, actually, not even a moment. But I will tell you, I had the fortune of being interviewed from BBC. Our headquarters were in Express Hotel in London. So Pippa Espel is a VP, was then VP of PR, and she took this opportunity to showcase how Orient Express was committed to New Orleans as a company. And the Windsor Court Hotel's GM, young Ashish Verma, was there with the team, bringing the hotel back. And in the interview process, I was labeled as a war promotion or a field promotion, being a military brat myself. So it was a little bit of a deja vu that between the First Battle of New Orleans, this was regarded as the Second Battle of New Orleans. I made a lot of great friends, including Captain Harry Mendoza. He's with now retired with NOPD. And he and I would say, brother, this is fighting the Second Battle of New Orleans. So going through that week is one, and then the recovery from it, it did feel a big sort of determined effort for us as New Orleanians to bring back the city, because a lot of our economy, the employment of my team depended on that. So I was more motivated that I should make sure that I bring this hotel back so my team can remain employed, because a lot of them had lost their homes, their families were affected, their family members had to relocate. So I think it became a larger cause in some ways. Yes, this is a luxury hotel, but my cause, Steve, became to work with my team towards New Orleans's comeback. And I was fortunate to have great friends, great support, and recognized and also elected later on as the president of the Greater New Orleans Hotel and Lodging Association, and worked very closely with the mayor and the governor at that time, Mayor Ray Nagin and Mitchell Andrew, Governor Bobby Jindal later on. So it was a very engaging, very important role at a very crucial and critical time for New Orleans.
It's amazing. You mentioned something, because it was one of my questions here. You got involved heavily during this time outside of the hotel and other positions. Was that something that you just naturally gravitated to, or you felt like you had to do it because of what was going on, or were people advising you like, hey, you should get involved and go do this?
Natural. And fortunately, I was guided with some very fine people, locals, my friends like Boise Bollinger and Miss Phyllis Taylor, Carol Suggs, Kirk Sturton. These are passionate New Orleanians who I became good friends with, and I was guided by them. And it was just an inner calling. There's a very deep, pure love in my heart for New Orleans. So it was definitely nothing to do with the job or what it's required of me or I must do it. Far from. It still remains a very important phase of my life and always will be.
Yeah. And listeners, if you're not watching this and you're just listening to this in the car, you should see Ashish's face. It's a big smile, eyes kind of twinkling, remembering this thing. So you could feel it as he's saying it. I feel it as you're talking about it. I can see how special it was to you. You're there, you're general manager. You've done a fantastic job getting that place back on its feet. You're making an impact in that city, and you make a change back to a familiar city. You end up heading back to New York. How does that happen, and where do you land?
Again, I wouldn't want to leave, but our company was selling the asset. Orient Express was making some changes. And when they decided, and I learned from my immediate supervisor, Vice President Dean Andrews, he was stepping away. And I thought, you know, with the uncertainty in many ways, and also my parents were moving from India, migrating here to the U.S., and I had some family here in New York, and they were going to move here to New York because this is where my family is. So it was personal in that sense, professional, because the chapter of Orient Express in New Orleans is closing. I was asked by Orient Express if I wanted to move overseas. There were a couple of opportunities in Portugal and in Australia with our properties. But for personal reasons, I think I'd better return to New York. Yep. I had my apartment here, which was sublet. And I reached out to a couple of friends in the recruitment world, executive recruiters. And I was so fortunate to be introduced to the Chartouni family at the Lowell here in New York with leading hotels of the world.
So you end up at the Lowell, again, another fantastic hotel, something I think that you've done through your career. You've always worked in these top-rated hotels. That was some good advice I got. Is that something you advise people when they're starting?
Absolutely. I think choosing where you work is critical, because obviously that's how you feel fulfilled. That's where you feel challenged. That's how you grow. The environment, who you want to work with, where you want to work. To me, fortunately, it's never been. Nothing I've done professionally has been because it's a job. And I've been obviously fortunate that I've been guided and blessed and worked with companies. And this particular opportunity is a great example. Me choosing, but obviously being chosen by the Shirchani family, by the Lowell.
And so at the Lowell, you're there, you have a great run. You're there 7 years. Is there something that really stands out? Like if you were to say, this is what I'm most proud of at this hotel, what is that?
Invariably, it's the team. The team is so committed and passionate. But I really must give credit to the Shirchanis as a family. They treated me, one, like a family. The eldest brother is Nabil Shirchani. His younger brother is Fuad Shirchani. And in some ways, there were some guests who would joke, you're the third Shirchani. I was like the youngest brother. The way they trusted me, they just basically, and they said it in the beginning, so you have the keys. Mrs. Shirchani, Mr. Fuad Shirchani, his wife, Mrs. Dina Shirchani, she was very hands-on in decor and design, and she gave us a lot of flair to the property with a beautiful, distinct style. So I think it's that trust, ultimately, Steve, from the ownership, mm-hmm. which made me so obliged to deliver. I had seen trust in the past, but with this family, it was remarkable. They wouldn't ask me anything on results. They wouldn't ask me anything on numbers. They just wanted to have a good time. They just wanted to, you know, care for the team and great sense of humor. Our holiday parties and lunches were seldom about work, something in context here and they might come up, but that even would be brushed aside. And we had a wonderful gentleman. He's like an asset manager, Don Brennan. He and I would talk business. And he and I was so enamored with the family that they said, we have to do everything to deliver. The confidence they have in us, we have to deliver. And that was given. Each year, we grew the revenues. We were the highest ADR in the United States when I left the property. Mm-hmm. And our ranking was consistently amongst the best, even globally, with Andrew Hopper being number one in the world. Yes.
You make a big impact. And you know, I want to continue on, but this is one of those hotels that is one of the top in the world. And you're leading the charge. How are you creating that culture in there? Is it an everyday thing? Is it during meetings? Is it just the way of life? Is it the hiring? Is it a mix of everything? How do you tell people to create that kind of culture?
Driven by excellence. It's something very innate and deep in me. Like the Japanese concept, Kaizen, always keep improving. So I inherited a beautiful property. But from the time I observed it from the Bill Bouquet, which is a restaurant in Pros, before I met with the ownership, I wanted to see the hotel, but I went incognito. So I had lunch at this brasserie across the street, then Bill Bouquet. And then I strolled around the property a little bit, went up to the Pembroke Room where they were serving breakfast, etc., to just get a feel of it. But I was making bento meals. It was tremendous opportunities to improve excellence, Kaizen. I knew it's a beautiful, great hotel, well reputed, but I was itching to make those changes with that deep core commitment on excellence. And we made with the team in a very dignified way, in a very caring way, together as a team. And I give them the credit at how we improved the Lowell considerably over those 7 years as a team.
I love it. So you're creating this amazing culture here. It sounds like a dream position, but just always in hospitality, there's always changes that start happening. And you make an interesting one and a big one where you become vice president of the luxury division at Starwood. So how does that change happen to where you join Starwood? At the time, one of the biggest hotel companies.
This one is a more difficult decision because I really love the family, the Shirchani family. The kids sort of grew up. Yes, it's 7 years, not that long, but the kids were small and they grew up and to see them. And because this is like their mansion on the Upper East Side. And I am the caretaker in many ways. And the team, I always am very close to my teams wherever I work. It was an opportunity for me to grow because that is an independent hotel. When I spoke to Mr. Shirchani Jr., or rather the younger brother, Mr. Fuad Shirchani, it's like, you know, and he said, you know, you could easily retire from here at the Lowell. And said, I know. However, I think it's time for me to sort of, you know, to, I won't say more, but in some ways take on more responsibilities. And this opportunity for me to become a VP in the luxury division for Dream Hotel Group, by the way, so Starwood is a franchise partner. And Dream Hotel Group at that time was actually called Debut Hotels. And I was hired by Mr. Eric Danziger, an amazing CEO. He worked briefly with us, but the person who introduced me is obviously the founder, I should say the chairman and founder of W Hotel, the Dream Hotel Group, Mr. Sanchat Hall. And this iconic hotel, he felt needed to be truly a luxury boutique hotel. It was not really at the best what it potentially could be, had very good hardware, but financially was not delivering. And when I spoke to Mr. Danziger, he knew that he was smart. Obviously, he's a CEO. So he knew that to get me to just move, and I don't say with any kind of arrogance, but from general manager to general manager, it was a little bit more difficult for me to consider. But he knew that as a VP luxury division, he wanted to grow the brand. He was looking at a luxury division brand, Augustus Hotels. So I was hired as a VP luxury division for Augustus Hotels. He was looking to grow the luxury portfolio with Augustus brand. And I took over the Chatwal as a GM overseeing the Chatwal New York, and then helped company grow the luxury division with Augustus.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about that journey, because the Chatwal is now part of your history. Give me, you know, how did you start creating this for yourself? Because now you've been doing this for a long time. You've developed these brands. You've won multiple awards. Kind of give us the story of how that starts happening.
Goes back to excellence. In that sense, extremely passionate. I'm very driven to always be a better version of myself. It's a very deep, almost a very intimate part of me. When I come to work, and I don't even call it work, but obviously in this conversation, I have to refer to that. When I come to my office, there's always this desire to say, what am I adding today? I am just not the person who goes through motions. I would not do anything practically, which is obviously the routine things, but I'm always looking to improve things. So every day I put a little agenda. I have a little time in the morning, time in the evening, very structured, if you will. And I'll take notes. What are my aspirations for today? How am I touching which department? What areas to improve and grow? So it was a very hectic, busy first 6-8 months when we really did an amazing amount of work at this property. Rebranding, changing color of the brand. It was black. We changed it to red. And the canopy, the awnings. We created suites, specialty suites, completely turned around the terraces. I bespoke, designed myself the uniforms of the team members, all public area, the artwork. So the property was completely repositioned, and fortunately, the guests recognize it. And Starwood, our franchise partner, who I work very closely with, because ultimately, Luxury Collection, one of the world's best brand, and subsequently in 2016, Marriott, I essentially was working with Starwood and Marriott. Since at W and then Dream Hotel Group, the portfolio is lifestyle and my portfolio is luxury division and the expertise. Mr. Chatwal knew it. The team at the corporate office knew it. They acted more like asset managers. They gave me complete freedom and autonomy to run the Chatwal and the brand as a luxury division, Starwood.
That's amazing. So you're there, Starwood and Marriott, you're doing the Chatwal, you're winning awards, and you mentioned something that you yourself are pushing yourself to excellence every single day. Now, hiring in hotels can sometimes be a challenge because sometimes you're coming into hotels and they have some other kind of habits. How do you get your team? Because it seems like your team loves you. You have people who are loyal to you. You care about the team. How do you get them up to your level of believing in Kaizen and pushing themselves every day?
Inspiring them comes from me embodying it, not just enacting it. And then comes the enlisting. So those three things are, if I embody and I enact those decisions, I'm enlisting a team which is passionate about it. It's not easy to find good talent for sure. But when you do, then you have to value it. Then you have to genuinely care for it. And not just because it's a resource for you, but because you have that obligation, that integrity, that somebody is vested in you. You want to make sure that you have everything possible for them to grow and glow and build their careers. So yes, I'm very, very particular about hiring, the orientation and how I sort of create the culture and the philosophy. And every day we embrace that and we practice it on a consistent basis. I give them the credit that obviously the love I show them, the faith I show them, the care I show them is given tenfold back to me.
Is there a book that you recommend to people when they're asking you? Because I just got asked this question when I was doing a training by a young manager. Is there a book or two that you recommend someone? It's a pop-up question. I didn't have you prepared for this one, but is there something off the top of your head that comes
No, I love reading. I love reading a lot of philosophy, and yes, I've read some self-help books. I've read more on lately anyways, from history and biographies. I find inspirations in a lot of biographies. Mm-hmm. Personally, on leadership, I read a lot of military history, being a military brat. So I think that can be very helpful, that how you can inspire and lead from the front. When it comes to management, John Maxwell, I read a fair bit of his series of books. And beyond those two, I believe beyond history, biographies, and self-help books, it's ultimately being in tune with yourself. To me, each one of us has core values, and I meditate, I do yoga, and I'm trying to be more and more aware and conscious that what my human core values are. And if I'm authentic, if I'm being myself as a leader, then I think the team will follow me truly for being a genuine, authentic leader. I think that's very important. And in addition to the reading, to really self-read, if you will, self-reflect and analyze, introspect, that what does that I stand for? What are my values and how I can inspire my team as a model?
So that's amazing. See, you have this very calmness about you. See, if I was your hotel manager, I feel like I would be a calm, but I feel like you'd hold me accountable to a lot of things. What kind of leader would you say that you are if I was to be on your team?
Calm. Yes, that's my core default state, but I am passionate. And I think you sense it as well, I hope. My team senses it. It's ultimately a balance. I believe, in real etat, in foreign policy, if you will, diplomacy without force and force without diplomacy, or an iron fist in a velvet glove. You have to be firm. You have to be very articulate or clear in your message. But the kindness and the compassionate part is because you respect. And if you do that approach, I think you garner more following in the belief in what you want to be achieved. So I don't think you have to drive it. You have to invoke it with the passion, with that energy, with that determination, with that expectation. I wouldn't settle for mediocrity. I wouldn't expect that. And I won't compromise integrity or excellence. So the team, I think, will raise their standards because it's almost, we don't want to accept.
I think if our listeners, please just rewind that last 45 seconds. If you're just looking to be a leader, listen to what Ashish just said. It's just a great way to put it. So I want to get back on the journey. That was selfishly for me, everybody. I wanted to hear that for myself. But give me a little bit here now. The Chatwal, it was standalone, and now it becomes part of Hyatt. Is that what starts happening and how you're at where you are today? Can you walk me through that transition?
That was an amazing afternoon, Steve. So Mr. Chatwal, the chairman of Dream Hotel Group, called me if I could come to his office. And that's very rare. That he would call me to his office. I said, it must be important. And he said, can you come this afternoon? I said, certainly, Mr. Chatwal. So I walked up from the hotel where my office is to Dream Hotel Group offices. And he said, we are being acquired. And I sensed it because we were conducting some tours. I sort of knew it. He told me, we're looking for some investors. He was not telling me that, we're selling Dream Hotel Group or we are up, for an acquisition. So I was conducting some tours for some different hotel companies. I knew when I conducted the property tours. And he said, we've been acquired. And I said, who is acquiring Dream Hotel Group? And he said, Hyatt. I said, oh my God, this is unreal. I was so excited. And he somehow did not know. He knew that I would come from Lowell and Orient Express, but he did not know, even knew the Oberoi's, but somehow he did not know that I'd
work. Your 11 Hyatt. Years at Hyatt, amazing.
In three continents, and three continents, exactly. So he said, you worked for Hyatt? I said, yes, I love the company. This is amazing. And then in that conversation, as I calmed down with my excitement and joy, I said, by the way, what is going to be our brand? Because I'd not kept too close with everything that was developing with Hyatt, though I know they were doing very well. And he said, Unbound Collection. So I was happy to hear that's an independent collection. And of course, I'd be very happy that if he were a branded Hyatt as well, but that makes sense because the Chatwal would be a luxury collection. And I transitioned to the Unbound Collection, which is a beautiful collection of luxury and some really unique properties around the world. So this is a perfect fit. Me coming back, Hyatt coming back to the family, and then Unbound Collection for the channel.
Amazing. So what is it like coming back 19, almost 20 years later? Was it a lot of the same things? Was it the same kind of culture and vibes? Or were you surprised by certain things? What was it like after all that time?
The the vibes were the same, exactly the same. So when I interacted with Mr. Mark Hoplamazian, our CEO, it just felt that we had grown as a company. Of course, and I shared that with him. Obviously, we had grown so much. But the core culture is exactly the same. Very, very warm, caring, genuine. The human side, it's just beautiful. And it comes from the Pritzker family. Obviously, it comes from Mr. Tom Pritzker, who I met with and after we were acquired again. It was like big bang in the family, but a much, much bigger family. Yes, there are a lot of extended elements of the family, but the core value is exactly the same, which was very impressive for a company to grow so much but keep the core the same.
I love hearing that. So now you're here. You're back at Hyatt with the Chartwell that you've kind of put together, all of these hotels. Now you're in charge of the Unbound collection. So what are you most excited about here in the next 12 to 24 months in your current role?
I'm part of the Unbound collection, the Chartwell brand, which I help oversee. The Chartwell New York and Unbound collection, the Chartwell Lodge, which I helped launch, we opened in 2022.
Which is beautiful. So if you haven't seen it yet, listeners, go online and check it out. It's beautiful.
Yes, indeed. It's 11 keys, all independent, one cottage, and then beautiful suites with terraces and fireplaces. And now we have even some tree houses. So the Chartwell Lodge, which is amazing for me, so enjoyable to develop it and launch it. The team is so passionate and caring. That was a great project for me to involve in. Through the pandemic, I was driving there once a week, once every other week, spending a lot of time with your namesake, actually, architect Steve. Last name is Dubrovsky. He's a gentleman and so passionate and talented. So we built this rustic refined in the Catskills, in a gated community, without making it sound snobbish, but it is in the Chapin Estate on the banks of Toronto Reservoir. That was 2.5-3 years project. We started before the pandemic and then eventually launching it. And we have two properties upcoming in Mexico under the Chartwell brand, which I also helped with a development team visiting Mexico and convincing the developers to choose us over some very good options they had. So we won those HMAs for these two hotels in Mexico. One is in San Miguel de Allende, and the other one is in Valle de Huelva.
Beautiful. And I want to get back to the lodge because I started seeing this now popping up more and more. This kind of outdoor, unique experiences. People want to connect with nature some more. Is that what you see? Is that going to be a long-term trend? Do you see it as a fad? Because I see so many people starting to get involved at different levels. What is your feeling on it? Because you were so hands-on on this one. There's not many people that have been hands-on on these kind of projects.
I think wellness is not a trend. I don't think well-being is a trend. I don't think good health has ever been a trend. But I think we just become more aware of being in touch. When I said there's self-reflection, there's self-introspection, who we are deep within is part of nature. And I don't want to go into metaphysics too much, but we are nature. So when we were forced to, as a human race, to go for the trees, into the jungles, or run away from the cities through the pandemic, the business model for resorts is not just a trend. I think it's sustainable. A lot of people had moved out, bought homes away, we know, in the country, so to speak, and they never quite have returned with their hybrid models of work, etc. But now making choices for your vacations, for time away with the family. Of course you love Paris. Of course you love New York. Of course you go to major urban cosmopolitan destinations. Of course you do. But I think people are doing more of the resorts and the nature getaways than they did in the past. And I firmly believe the focus on nature, on wellness, is here for a long, long time. Because the way things are with the environment, with just the younger generation also much more in tune and committed and passionate about it as our generation didn't and our older generation didn't for different reasons. But I think the younger generation will be more and more the future for nature retreats, for resorts, for wellness and well-being is in hospitality, super bright.
I love hearing that. We're actually working on that down here in Miami right now, trying to get approvals to open something on a farm. So we're actively working on that. So it's amazing to hear you say that as well. It makes me feel good. I got my hair is up on my arms as you're mentioning it. So I feel that the same way as you do. I think that for whatever reason, I've always been a city boy. I've been Miami Beach. The beach is my national park. But whenever I go out onto the farms or into the woods, like I feel a different vibe. And I think you kind of nailed it. It's like we were meant to be out there to recharge.
Can I just share a snippet? I live on the Upper East Side and I would do different commutes to work. I'd take a bike sometimes, my bike, and very often I walk. I walk across the park. It's a 45-minute, 50-minute walk. Now, when I'm walking across the park, I'm trying to walk the least I can on the paved path, if you will. I want to walk as much as I can on grass.
Yeah.
So I'm going cross because I'm hungry to say, I want to walk on. Of course, I have my shoes on and so forth. I'm just commuting from work on foot. But I think we crave that. I crave it. I know you do. And most people crave that as much as we can to be in touch with nature, to touch the grass through my shoes. I can walk on it. I'm happier.
Yeah, it was funny. My wife started making fun of me sometimes because I'll walk in the grass with my bare feet in the park. And I was like, look, it just feels good. Just like when we put our feet in the sand or in the ocean.
That's very healthy, by the way. It's supposed to be very healthy to walk bare feet on grass. It's supposed to be very good for your eyesight, Steve.
Well, you see, Ashish, you could do it in the park today. I'll do it down here. We'll do it at the same time. So listen, you've been doing so many things, and I appreciate you sharing all this time. So if young Ashish was starting in your hotel today, he walks through the doors at one of your hotels. What advice are you giving to young Ashish? Because very different hospitality right now. There are still a lot of core values that are the same, but the world's a little bit different. What would you tell young Ashish?
Know what your exact aspiration or the closest you can, your heart and your happiness is in. If sales makes you happy, if operations makes you happy, if IT makes you happy, I would say what makes you happy, what fulfills you. I wouldn't suggest try and do a model career. Try and look what within you feels fulfilled. And if it is to be CEO, and if it is to be a general manager or a director of sales and marketing, follow that passionately. But be true to yourself. Be honest with yourself. Now, sometimes there's peer pressure. Sometimes there's family expectations. I don't want to have family feuds and any crazy dramas for the young folks, the younger Ashishes who come to me. But I would suggest that ultimately try and do what you really want to do. Because once we recognize that and we follow that, excellence is a byproduct. Roger Federer excels at tennis because he loves tennis. Novak Djokovic is great because he loves the sport. Anybody who excels in his field is because you love what you do. So if you love that particular area of expertise, you love hospitality, follow the heart. That would be my principal advice. And the rest, the skills, the knowledge, the planning of the career, what to do and how to do it will follow. The choice you make for yourself, be very, very passionately clear about it and committed to it.
I think that's just great advice for anybody in any industry. You hit me in the heart too here, Ashish. I appreciate it. I feel like you're just talking directly to me. And I know listeners out there, you're going to appreciate that advice as well. Well, Ashish, if anybody wants to get in contact with you, what's the best way for them to do that after they're hearing this amazing podcast?
They can email me at ashish.verma. It's my first name, ashish.verma@hyatt.com. Or they can get in touch with you on my mobile phone easily on WhatsApp these days, 917-667-6501, and Ashish is here to serve. Anything I can do, I'll be delighted to and honored.
Well, I'm very grateful you spent this time with us. I know how busy you are, Ashish, and I hope to call you a new friend here in the future.
Absolutely, Steve. You are my friend, and thank you so much. My gratitude to you.
This podcast is brought to you by Biscayne Coffee. Biscayne Coffee was founded with a giving spirit and a big idea: to enjoy delicious coffee roasted in Miami while helping save Biscayne Bay and the animals that live there. As a former food and beverage director, I can assure you these are some of the best quality beans on the planet. 10% of every coffee sold is donated to nonprofits to help preserve Biscayne Bay for all to enjoy. Visit BiscayneCoffee.com today and use promo code MENTOR at checkout to save 10% on your first order. Drink good coffee and create a good outcome.